You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to our first Twitter Spaces in like 2 weeks. Feels like it's been a while. I've been very busy and just haven't found the time, but we're back at it, and we're back at it on a pretty good day because the Yankees won 5-4 walk-off win over the Cleveland Guardians. They've won 4 of their last 5. They're starting to look like a real baseball team, and that's encouraging. I don't know how many people we're going to actually have in space, but we are recording it, so it'll cast, which again, we haven't done in a little while. But, Peter, hi, how are you?
Hey, Josh. Thanks for holding up a little bit while I did my errands, which I know that you're going to bring up in the beginning of this this podcast. But, yeah, happy end to what looked like it could have been a bleak day, especially with Nestor dealing and the offense not providing a ton of support early on. But they got there.
Yeah, so I do want to talk a little bit. We're going to talk about everything that happened in the Yankees game. We're going to talk a little bit about Miguel Cabrera. But before, so I texted Peter and I said, you know, let's do a Twitter space after the game because the game ended exciting. There was a lot going on. And he said, okay, give me until 5 because I'm running errands. I'm like, yeah, sure, no problem. And he's like, oh, there's a lineup at the drive-thru ATM, which, first of all, what even is a drive-thru ATM? Second of all, there's this like fascinating thing that Americans have where like for a country that was entirely built around like being the financial and economic engine of the world, your consumer finance system just doesn't work at all. My favorite thing about America is like when I go, if I'm like at a restaurant and I give, like I have to give my credit card to the server and they walk away with it, which doesn't make sense to me. Where are you going with my credit card? That's please don't take that. And I still have to sign for things, like sign for a credit card. So there's that. There's apparently, so you got your income tax refund, so congratulations on that. But they send you an actual check. They don't just deposit it in your bank account.
So you're given, when you're doing the tax filing software, you're given a choice between direct deposit or a paper check. And I'm just old fashioned like that.
Wild.
So I physically requested the paper check.
And then you can't, like, so, like, on my phone, in a country with a robust consumer finance sector, I just take a picture of the check, and it gets deposited into my account. And this has been the way for, I think that was, like, 2014 or 2015 that became the standard. That's new for you? Or do you not have that at all?
Also, old-fashioned of me, or old man of me, I haven't updated my iOS in months. And the banking app doesn't work on the old version. So I'm stuck in the zone. I am.
Okay.
We don't need to talk about that. But yeah, no, it's, yeah, the refund check came in. I wasn't even expecting it, but then like, so Biden had paid out, COVID relief to all taxpayers, and I didn't get mine. So like, that's what the refund is. This, I don't even know if I'm allowed to share that publicly, but who cares?
Whatever. I'm getting $5,000 back in my refund, so I'm feeling good. Should just be a speaker. I feel like if there's not a lot of people here, if it's just the three of us, we can kind of just chat and this will get recorded. I see that you're the only one that stayed through our conversation of the American consumer finance system. you know what, buddy? Here, I'll invite you and then you can decide what you want to do. But yes, we should actually talk about the Yankees. I mean, I guess start with hooligans, Peter.
Yeah, not a good look.
So everybody saw it. The Yankees, Isaiah Kinda-Falefa hits a ball to the outfield. Stephen Kwan runs face first into the left field wall, which it's something that, like, as much baseball as I watch, it always surprises me that guys, I get that they're tracking the ball and everything, but like the way that a grown man will just run, you know, a 200-pound person will run full sprint into a wall, always manages to surprise me when it happens. I get that they're focused on other things, but it's just, you know, it's a weird thing. I hope he's okay. He looked really banged up. And of course that wall at Yankee Stadium, it's kind of like it's the video board. So it's got like a fence over it. And I guess his face is pretty cut up. So I hope that Stephen Kwan is okay. And then according to Oscar Mercado and Miles Straw, who are the other two Cleveland outfielders today, something got said by someone in the outfield and it let Miles Straw off. And I think it's important when we have these kind of conversations to remember, like, baseball players get heckled constantly, especially outfielders, constantly. They constantly have things yelled at them and they almost never react. So they're pretty desensitized to, you know, garden variety heckling. And that makes me think that whatever was said must have been sort of beyond what we would consider like regular heckling. And Miles Straw took exception to that. He crawled about halfway up the outfield fence and started jawing back at fans. And then, you know, Gleyber Torres had a walk-off hit that drove in Kinda-Falefa and the Yankees won the game. And boy, did Gleyber Torres need a moment like that, given how lost he's looked all year. And, you know, we don't even really get to celebrate it because fans start throwing full cans of beer on the field at the Cleveland outfield. And, I mean, this is like a confluence of things. I think I've never been a big fan of selling liquor past the seventh inning at games. I think that you're just putting yourself in dangerous positions. I saw similar things have happened. Like, it doesn't just happen at Yankee Stadium. Of course, very famously happened at the Rogers Center, in the wild card game against the Orioles a couple of years ago. But yeah, I mean, I just kind of thought, Peter, what did you think? I mean, it's gross. But is there anything more worth saying?
I'm just going to get it out in front that I'm not condoning any of the behavior that happened. It was pretty gross to see that happen. Like you said, Kwan ran into probably the worst spot in the outfield wall that he could have. It's basically, for people who aren't familiar with Yankee Stadium, it's like a chain link fence covering like a hard glass or like LED scoreboard. And he went full tilt face first into it. And I, like, looking at the slow-mo replay, he looked a little concussed. I was worried he was really hurt. And it was, again, not condoning anything that happened, but I think it was just kind of a perfect storm confluence of events that led to the ultimate throwing of shit onto the field. Like, Straw climbing the fence and jawing just gave these already drunk fans all the ammunition that they needed to escalate their actions, and then we saw the result of it. And like, talk about really ruining what was otherwise like a pretty awesome moment, especially like you said, for Gleyber Torres, who's been scuffling to start the season. You know, this is exactly the kind of moment that you think, hey, can this jumpstart a season for him? And all that people are going to remember is Judge and D having to go and literally tell people stop throwing shit onto the field. So yeah, it really rained on what could have been a otherwise really happy moment for the Yankees. And again, I'm going to keep saying I'm not condoning this, but it was an interesting reference point, because how many of y'all watch like Premier League games, like British Premier League games? People throw shit onto the field every single time, like the away team scores, and it's just like any other Sunday, and it's interesting to see the difference in the public's reaction to such an event. It seems almost commonplace there, and it's not a good thing to do, regardless of where it is, regardless of what the event is. And
so, a couple questions on that. So, like, I don't watch the Premier League. I believe in America. So, how far away are fans from the field? Because I think that baseball is like baseball and basketball. You are right on top of the players.
It's the same thing. It's the same thing. In the Premier League. They're right on top of the field.
Okay.
Yeah.
And do you get served beer in cans, or is it in those glass little plastic cups?
Glass bottles.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you know what? Don't be like soccer hooligans.
Yeah. Yeah. Just don't throw stuff onto the field. Yeah.
There was a baseball game that was played, and it was a pretty good, pretty entertaining baseball game. So Nestor Cortes Jr., he finally gave up a run. If you had the pool at 14 2/3 shutout innings to start the season, congratulations, you win. He got into the fifth inning before Josh Naylor took him deep for a 2-run home run, struck out 8 guys, walked 2, 6 1/3 innings, really, really strong again. I mentioned it in the recap, but I thought what was really telling about the way that the Yankees think about Nestor in that seventh inning, Jose Ramirez is leading off. So Jose Ramirez is, everyone knows, he's one of the 4 or 5 best hitters in the game, and he's off to a great start this year. And it's the third time he's faced Cortes in the game. So Clay Holmes is warm in the bullpen. Like, there's no one would blame Aaron Boone for going to the bullpen in that spot. That makes a lot of sense. Bring Holmes in, and then there are 2 righties hitting after Ramirez. So you have, you know, Ramirez is a switch hitter. He's going to have the platoon advantage no matter what you do. But no, Boone leaves Cortes into Ramirez, and Cortes gets him with like a really weak pop-up on the third time through. And the second time Ramirez had faced Cortes, he absolutely froze him with a pitch, a cutter on the inside that he sort of did that weird, you know, delay in his delivery. But I think that's really telling of, like, there's a lot of memes about Nestor Cortes Jr., and deservedly so, because he's fun to watch. But I wonder, like, people, I'm not sure, maybe taking Nestor Cortes seriously. I think that he's, because he's so fun and he's so unexpected, maybe are not giving him the credit or the respect that he maybe deserves for being a legitimately good pitcher. And clearly the Yankees are like, hey, the best hitter on the team is up. We feel comfortable leaving Nestor in.
Yeah, isn't it interesting that in the early going, it seems like they have the most trust in Nestor of all their starters to not only go that third time through the order, but to face, like you said, a top 5 hitter in baseball. I mean, talk about a meteoric rise for a pitcher who, like you said, doesn't get a lot of the recognition he deserves, because we've talked about this a lot. His stuff is legitimately elite. When you look at the movement, the rise on his fastball, when you look at the horizontal sweep on his slider, and I think Eno Saris did looked at his command, and it has him near the top of his command plus leaderboards. Like, he is a legit pitcher who I think people are starting to come around, but I think there's still a significant portion who still view him as that kind of crafty, weird angles lefty. But no, like, his stuff matches up with anybody.
Mm-hmm. How good? I mean, we talked about this in Slack, but like, it's been a fun ride. It's probably going to be some regression. He's probably going to have a bad game at some point. Maybe he doesn't, but he's probably going to have a bad game at some point. If we're talking about like 162 game season of Nestor Cortes, how good is this guy?
Yeah, I mean, I think people just have to completely reevaluate their projections for him. I think here, let me take a look at what Fangraph's projection was for him preseason. They had him as like a 1.5 win pitcher. And I think with today's start, he's already probably going to be up to a win. And yeah, I mean, the thing about Nest, Michael Kay and Coney talked about on the broadcast, is that you're always kind of waiting for the house of cards to collapse.
But I don't think it's a house of cards.
I don't think it is. Exactly. And I think Cone made a really, was sure to kind of reiterate the point that no, the work that Nestor put in over, especially over the off season in increasing his strength and getting more physically fit, for a better term, is what's allowing his stuff to play up. And of course, we've talked a lot about the influence that Matt Blake and the rest of the pitching coaches have had with pitch design. And it's something that we're going to continue to talk about all throughout the year. I think that they've identified these characteristics of his pitches that can get anybody out. And I think that there is a stickiness to it. I think, I mean, he sits near the top of the spin rate leaderboards on a lot of his pitches. And again, the command, I mean, I think I've always said command is such a elusive thing to capture, but it really is. I don't know. I think it's the next frontier for pitch evaluation. Of course, it's hard to codify intent and stuff like that, but the way that he commands all of his pitches to all quadrants of the zone and is not afraid to use multiple different pitches in any count in any given situation, I just think makes him such a hard matchup for hitters. I mean, he has trust of five different pitches and commands them all, you know, at an above average ability. Cohn was talking a lot about his cutter on the broadcast, and kind of shameless plug here, I just a piece just went up on the site that I wrote for today about Nestor and Lucas Licky's cutters. And I think it's really cool because we've seen how the cutter has been added to Gerrit Cole and Luis Severino's arsenals. But the cutter that Cortez and Licky throw is a completely different variation. And I think it's a really cool insight into the way that the Yankees are not taking really a one-size-fits-all approach to pitch design, even with the same pitch type. Mm-hmm. And his cutter, it really does play up. And you see how off-balance hitters are. And I think the success of his cutter owes a lot to how sneaky good his fastball is, his four-seamer is. Yes. Because the spin on the cutter mirrors really closely with the four-seamer, but it has that sharp late horizontal break and a little bit of that speed differentiation between the two pitches. So the fact that he's able to throw both to all four quadrants and in all counts, I think just makes him such an unpredictable pitcher.
So entering play today, his FIP was negative, which is always a C.
Yeah.
So he's with this start today, he struck out 45% of batters he's faced. I don't think that continues over 130, 140 innings or whatever he throws this year. I do think that he
agreed.
Barring injury, I think that he stays in the rotation for the entire season. Like I don't see a reason for the Yankees to move him in and out to give a spot start to protect his innings. Like, number one, he's been your best pitcher, so get as much out of him as you can. And number two, he's a bonus. Like, he really is a bonus in this rotation. So while you're protecting Severino and, you know, maybe as with Gerrit Cole that needs to be focused on is, like, Gerrit, just go out and throw five innings. Like, throw the best five innings that you possibly can. We know that Cole is a guy that wants to finish every single game, but just go and throw the best five innings that you possibly can. We got to fix you. Cortez is a bonus, so ride him as much as you possibly can this season. And I mean, clearly he can go into the sixth inning or past the sixth inning, I guess. So I don't think that he is going to strike out 45% of batters, but again, like, to your point, like, the cutter is legit, the fastball is legit, the slider is legit. He has three real pitches, so I don't think he's also going to go down all of a sudden to striking out 20% of batters. Like, he's a guy that I think is going to be slight, you know, somewhat above average in terms of his strikeout rate. So we're talking like 28, 29%. He has command, so he's not going to walk a ton of guys. He's going to give up a home run at some point. Well, I guess he gave up one today. But I mean, you put it all together and you're looking at like a 3.7 to 3.9 ERA pitcher over a full season. Like, yeah, that's a 3.5, 4 win player.
I was going to say, that's like a 4 win player
for nothing.
Yeah. Like, and yeah, to your point, he provides the rotation protection, because if you know that he's going to go out there and give you 6 plus innings every starts, that allows you to be a little bit more liberal reliever usage if, say, Cole doesn't have it on his start, you know, or can only give you 5 of those, like, you know, full tilt innings. Mm. So He's such a valuable asset at the back of their rotation. And I agree with you that there's no reason for him to move him from that role. I think you keep rolling with him as long as he keeps showing it to you.
Yeah.
And I do think, I think the strikeout numbers, like you said, he's not going to strike out 40%+ of batters, but I think they're sticky. I mean, I could definitely see him being, you know, in that elite tier of the 20% plus strikeout minus walk ratio.
Sure. That's very, he doesn't walk guys either. Yeah.
Yeah. He's walking like 3% of batters this year. And I mean, that's in the tier of the Coles and the DeGroms and everybody, you know, that 20% threshold. And yeah, I mean, it's a breath of fresh air. It's fun to watch. Maybe is it like the new market inefficiency to have a guy who doesn't throw 100 with a drop slider, you know? Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, I think people say that sort of stuff a lot, and then it's like, well, then how come Jonathan Loaisiga is still great?
Right.
And, you know, like, so.
Yeah, I say that half jokingly, but yeah.
I think that, like, you can't, or like, why is Luis Severino great? Like, there are different ways to pitch, and like, I do think that we need, again, we've talked about it, but like, we do need to be careful about how we talk about Nestor Cortes, because he isn't Jamie Moyer. Like, right. He's not, or Jared Weaver, or any of these other like junk baller lefties. He's not. His stuff is legit. Mm-hmm. I just, like, every single time that I watch him, I he's made 3 starts this year. They've all been excellent. Yeah, like I get this feeling that you're waiting for him to get rocked. Like you're waiting for that cutter that he threw to Jose Ramirez. You're waiting for that ball to be hit 480 feet into Monument Park, and Ramirez can't do anything on it. Like, just stands there, and it's middle in. It's a pitch that I've seen Jose Ramirez crush that ball before, and he cannot pick it up. It completely fools him, and he stands there and he strikes out, and it keeps happening. And you're like, well, what if this is Nestor Cortes again? He's not gonna run a 1.15 ERA or whatever it is right now, but yeah, I think that this guy. Cole is still the ace. I mean, we'll see about that. Sevy has been really impressive. After that, I think Cortes is like the third guy in this rotation.
Oh, agreed. Definitely.
You know, we're projecting out a full season, obviously. You know, because I don't think he quite has the ceiling of a Cole or Severino. But no. Boy, like, if you found a 4-win pitcher thing, that is really something, and it just goes to speak to like this crazy organizational shift of the Yankees, where they are a pitching dominant organization all of a sudden, which has not been the case for 100+ years of baseball.
Yeah, 100%. And that we're even saying that when it's been the one thing that we've been clamoring for as a fan base, you know, ad nauseum. And like, just going back to that Jose Ramirez at bat, I'm looking at it like, Jose was late and underneath a 91 mile an hour fastball that was pretty much middle.
Yeah. Jose Ramirez is as good a hitter as Mike Trout is.
Yeah.
and he is no answer for Cortes. It's incredible. It's so crazy. It was a crazy start. The other thing that I want to talk about with this game, that sort of middle third of the order, Josh Donaldson, Aaron Hicks, Joey Gallo, looked pretty good today. Donaldson reached base 3 times. Hicks reached, what, twice?
Yep.
And Gallo reached twice, plus he had that really hard line drive in the ninth that could have been a double. And this is where, like, I really think that the Yankees need... I mean, I think that there's some interesting stuff with Kiner Falefa's new swing. He's, like, reasonably interesting. I don't have any faith in Kyle Higashioka at all. I don't care. And, you know, we know that Judge and Stanton are going to hit. Like, Stanton does this every year. He has a cold 3 weeks, and then he picks it up. But if you get those 3 guys, Donaldson, Hicks, Gallo, playing to their career lines. So, I mean, Donaldson, a 125, 130 WRC plus hitter. Hicks probably a little bit less than that, and Gallo probably a little bit more than that. Then all of a sudden, this lineup looks really long and really dangerous. If those 3 guys aren't hitting, then it's, you know, it's DJ and Judge and Stanton and not much else. It's only 1 game, but I thought a really, really encouraging game from those 3 guys who the Yankees really need them to carry some of the freight on days Judge isn't going to hit 2 home runs.
Yeah. And that's the thing. That's why you bring in a Donaldson and a Gallo is to cover those days. Giancarlo is cold and Judge has an off day. And I think that was always the intention. And unfortunately, it didn't come in the first few weeks. And with Gallo, it's been more of an extended period. But yeah, I mean, you and I have talked about how much this team needs a four-win bat that just plugs into the middle of their lineup. And any of the, you know, two of those three guys, when they're playing at true potential, is that guy, which is, I may be a little bit pessimistic that they will make, you know, any big addition between now and the trade deadline. I think that the chips were pushed in on, look, these are our guys, Joey Gallo, Josh Donaldson. These are our guys who.
Well, I also don't know what, like, we're going to have this conversation in June again, but I don't know who you could even pick up at the deadline. Like, it's not going to be a good.
Right. It's kind of barren.
Yeah. I don't want Jesus Aguilar.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you and I have said, like, who's the best hitter who's plausibly available? Probably Nelson Cruz.
And he doesn't have a spot on the lineup.
So, but yeah, no, like, to your point about, like, Hicks, you wrote about Hicks has looked better, especially over the last week. I think that the leadoff role is an interesting, I mean, if he can continue to draw walks at the rate that he is, he does look a little less jumpy at the plate to my eye. I think I do like the leadoff role for Hicks. Donaldson, I'm not worried about him. You know, he grinds. Okay. I'm not worried about him the way that I'm worried about Joey Gallo, but like Donaldson, you know, like, you know, when you need it, he's going to draw a walk at a minimum.
Or and he's when gonna hit a ball to center field, and he's
or
gonna get out,
right, like, or he's going to jack one out and pimp the shit out of it.
Speaking of though, if I don't think that so, the ball is not juiced this year. I think we can all agree on that. Oh, yeah, and Josh, maybe because that ball almost was caught.
I know,
and,
it wasn't a no
about halfway to first base. I mean, I love it. I love the confidence. It's part of what has made Josh Donaldson one of my favorite players for a long time. But like. I was watching that ball die out there, and I was like, that better get over the fence, or that's going to look really stupid. But it got over, so that's what matters.
Yeah.
I think, you know, the lineup construction thing is really interesting to me. I mean, DJ kind of gets the leadoff spot by default, but his mechanics just look so much better. Like, he just – I don't think that DJ LeMahieu is ever going to be a 160 WRC-plus hitter over a full season. But, like, again, if we're talking about a guy that – is similar to Donaldson, that kind of 120, 130 bat. The amount of times that DJ puts the ball in play, I'm kind of trying to figure out, and you know, it's mostly just like back of the envelope stuff, but like DJ is going to have a lot of hard contact, which to me, I mean, I see the value when hitting behind Judge and Stanton, when he was hitting fifth there for a little bit, because right. Judge and Stanton are going to get on base a lot. And then you have a guy in DJ that's going to make a lot of hard contact and move those guys around the bag. The downside to that is the double plays, which DJ LeMahieu, that's going to be part of the thing. When you have DJ on your team, he's going to hit into a lot of double plays because he makes a ton of contact. So trying to balance the cost benefit of that is a really interesting one to me, because he's just like, even if he's hitting leadoff, like, yeah, he only leads off once a game, but Kyle Higashioka is hitting in front of him. So, like, DJ's not going to hit into a lot of double plays with Higgy batting ninth. So, it's an interesting thing, but the lineup looked good today. And so, I'm kind of just inclined to be like, this is a team that's been struggling to score. Lots of hard contact. Every single guy in the order had a batted ball over 95 miles per hour today.
Yep.
So, but yeah. This was the first game in about a week that I was like, okay, this baseball team is starting to look like a baseball team again.
Yeah, and even saying that, and I agree. I looked at the lineup when the Yankees released the lineup. I was like, okay, like I can definitely work with this. And then through the first six innings, it's like, ah, shit, not again. But yeah, I was worried there. I was actually contemplating going for a walk in the beautiful weather that we have here when Nestor was shoving and he was getting no run support again. Thankfully I stuck around. But can we actually talk about Chad Green for a second?
I'd prefer not to, but
okay.
what are your just Chad say, Green thoughts?
Yeah, I just want to say there's really no justification in my mind there, and I know it's two bad outings, but we've seen this too much from him. I mean, I think there's no justification for him being as high up on the totem pole as he still is. Like, I could name like maybe one reliever who I want to see less like come into a high leverage situation right now than him.
Is it Wandy?
Yeah. So I'm so over Wandy Peralta.
Yeah, I mean, like, this is, you can kind of see, and like, this is what kind of sucks about baseball these days, is like, you can see that Chad Green is starting to lose it. Like, he's not in his prime anymore. He was never like, his command was never great. It was just that, like, he threw a high spin fastball 96 up at a time, like, this again, like, we're talking like 2017, 2018, when he was really a really elite reliever.
Mm-hmm.
He was doing that sort of on the vanguard of a lot of relievers being able to do that. Now that everybody does it, he's never had a great breaking ball. Like, and that's been, I think, the biggest difference. Like, if you watched Emmanuel Clase today, like, yeah, he's got this incredible 102 mile per hour cutter that is like, if you just like, if Mariano Rivera and Captain America Love Child, like, that's the pitch that they would be able to throw.
Yeah.
And but this crazy 90 mile per hour slider at the top of the zone that you can't do anything with, like, never had that. He's always just really relied on a fastball, and he has gotten hit, like, he's always gotten hit hard when he misses with the fastball, and you can just see that, like, he's lost a little bit off it. He, you know, proverbially, he's lost a bit off the fastball. And yeah, I agree with you. I don't see why you would want him in over five guys in that bullpen.
Exactly. Yeah. And he's always been a one pitch pitcher, and he's still a one pitch pitcher. And that one pitch is, not only has it been made sort of average by the rest of the league catching up to it, but it's actually just gotten worse, like, on its own. Like, he's throwing it slower. It has less rise. It has less spin. Like, it's just kind of an average four-seam fastball now. And if you're a high-leverage reliever with a 94-mile-an-hour meh fastball and a curveball that you really have no business throwing, I just don't really see how that's valuable to a team.
Especially, and it just goes to show, like, I think that there has been this thing around, like, the Yankees, where it's like, oh, like, we have Matt Blake and we have, like, all this pitching tech, and so you give us your pitchers and we will fix them. And it's like, well, it doesn't always work, because I guarantee you the Yankees have spent four years trying to teach Chad Green a secondary pitch, and none of it has worked. Maybe this new sweeping slider that they've been rolling out with a bunch of guys is going to take. I doubt it. But it is just like there's very clearly something with Chad Green where he just cannot get a handle on a second pitch. And it should cost him a spot if it hasn't already. But you know what? There's other stuff to talk about in baseball. Hello, Sam. Everybody, welcome Sam. He's one of our newer writers. His first article was Sunday, I think? Monday?
Monday.
How do you feel? What's up, Sam? Did you get any death threats?
I honestly just tried to avoid it for the most part. I figured, but I mean, if you're making people mad, that's kind of, you know, that's the art. That's the art of it. So.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
So I wanted to talk to Sam and Peter about Miguel Cabrera, one of the best, the very, very best baseball players that you or I or anybody in this chat will ever see. He had his 3,000th hit today. There was a fun little moment where he had his 3,000th hit. They stopped play and they did the standing ovation. And then Spencer Torkelson hit a very Miguel Cabrera-esque right field home run. You know, going the other way, and it was like, oh, like, this is how time works. Like, Miguel Cabrera is very much on the downswing of his career. And Spencer Torkelson kind of like looks a lot like Miguel Cabrera, at least on that one swing. But so Cabrera has the 500 home runs. He has 3,000 hits. He's probably going to be the last guy for a while to get 3,000 hits. So I believe that Jose Altuve is the next closest. Or sorry, no.
Robinson Cano.
Robinson Cano is, of course, yeah. Cano is the next closest. I have in front of me a piece that Dan Zimborski did last year where he ran Zips projections to see who would be the next guy to get to 3,000 hits. And, like, the only players that have above a 20% chance of reaching 3,000 hits are Jose Altuve, Freddie Freeman, and Fernando Tatis Jr., and then 15%. So Freeman, I would be really skeptical. 1,700-odd hits. I mean, he's younger than I think he is. He's only 32, but it strikes me as someone that is probably not going to get to 3,000 hits. Altuve, I mean, kind of see it. It's sort of his kind of game. Tatis and Sink, they're just way too far out to really say with any kind of confidence that they'll get there. They're just so far away. But, you know, at the same time, like, do you need 3,000 hits to be recognized as a great player anymore? Like, I think this is the conversation that I wanted to have with you too. Like, we're not going to see 3,000 hits. We're not going to see 300 wins. We might not see 500 home runs for a while. These are like the classic milestones of what makes a great player. And they're kind of impossible to get to.
Yeah. And I would even go out on a limb and say we might, like, Miguel Cabrera might be the last guy to get to 3,000 hits. I know Jay Jaff had... Is it Jaff or Jaffe? Let me just
get Jaffe.
Okay. I think it's Jaffe. Yeah, I know Jay Jaffe
wrote Pinstripe Alley alumni.
I know. Yeah. Everybody shit on me for not knowing how to pronounce his name. But no, I think he wrote a really good piece earlier in the week about just declining offense in general and pointing at, declining averages across the league, how 2022, you know, small sample caveat and everything, is on pace to have the lowest league batting average in either the live orders. And I think just kind of this, pitchers are so nasty these days that I just really don't see how you're going to get people who can string together 15 straight 200 hit seasons. Like you said, Altuve had a couple of them and he looked like maybe he was on pace. I don't think he gets there. I definitely don't think Freeman gets there. Like, you look at Machado and Trout, both at 1,400, they're not going to get there. And then so you have to kind of turn your attention to some of the younger generation, Tatis, Soto, Vlad, Acuna, and I also don't think any of them get to 3,000 hits. I think it's just harder to get hits in baseball nowadays than it ever has been before. There's probably also like an increased emphasis on base versus drawing walks than maybe there had been in the past. We're going to talk about maybe adjusting those milestones. I think 500 home runs is still in reach for a lot of players, but Sam, I'd like to get your take on, do you think we will ever see someone after Miguel Cabrera get to 3,000 hits?
Just very, very quickly before Sam gets to it, I just want to make a quick point on batting average. And I don't care about batting average, but I think obviously you need it to get hits. So I have all the 3,000 hitters in front of me. The two lowest career batting averages for guys that have 3,000 hits, Cal Ripken is the lowest at 276, and Ricky Henderson is the second lowest at 279. Now, the two things that those guys had is they played forever. Like, they did not go away. And, you know, if I don't think that any of us would be surprised if Fernando Tatis Jr. in his, you know, in his early 20s hit 279 this year, like, we'd be like, yeah, that's a good season for Tatis, a lot of home runs. But it's like, I don't think he's going to do that for 24 years, however fucking long Ricky played for. I just think, like, just the math just doesn't work. Anyway, Sam, curious, jump off of what what Peter said.
Yeah, yeah, I think like with, you know, Soto, what you said was one of the higher percentages, and I think just that just the amount of walks he draws like almost automatically makes it so unlikely. And I had this conversation about like how far away anybody else is from that today. And my first guess was Machado, but you were right. He's only, you know, 1,400, so that's a ways to go. And he's, you know, in his 11th season right now. And I know for a while it was sort of a thing that there was no modern Hall of Famers with 2,000 hits. And I feel like just all those figures are just kind of, they sort of have to adjust with just the way, that, you know, the way players are playing now. And just as more and more players sort of, you know, careers come and go, I think, yeah, I mean, those numbers will have to adjust. And I think 500 home runs still works because, I don't know, that seems much more in reach and much more just plausible with the way modern game is. But, yeah, I mean, 3,000 is a long, long ways away. I think our best bet is probably getting next to unretire.
He was so close. Oh, man. Yeah, like what a weird... What are we? So it's funny that you guys are talking about. And I'm gonna pull up because Dan did the same exercise with 500 home runs. So I just want to see who did he have. So he gave Mike Trout an 85% chance to hit 500 home runs. Mm. Tatis 46%, Cruz 42%, Soto and Acuna 35%, Vlad Guerrero 30%. Those are the only guys with at least a 30% chance.
46 home runs seems like crazy high, right?
I feel like. I mean, this was last August before he broke his wrist and then fell again. And someone should put rules around what Fernando Tatis Jr. is allowed to do. but I'm actually skeptical. I'm actually more skeptical than you guys are that we'll see a 500 home run hitter. I think the new mark is probably four. I think if you're a 400 home run hitter, I think that's going to start carrying more cachet because we're just not going to see guys get to that level. And so, I guess the big question is. Peter and I were texting about this earlier this week, but it's like 65 WAR is kind of the cutoff, you know, be right around there. That's what we see as a Hall of Famer. You know, it used to be 3,000 hits, it used to be 500 home runs. Now it's like, if you're at like 65-ish WAR, you're a Hall of Famer, but there isn't a moment where you cross 65 WAR. Like WAR just doesn't function that way. There won't be, you know, a moment where
they stop.
Aaron Judge crosses 65 WAR and they stop the game and they're like, oh my God, amazing. Like, that's just not the way the stat works. So then, like, how do we memorialize players when most of them aren't going to get to the metrics that we've decided are important for career accumulation? And the metrics that we do see value in just don't function the same way.
Yeah, I think... the thing is, I think that the milestones such as like 300 wins, 3,000 strikeouts, 500 home runs, and 3,000 hits are so deeply entrenched in baseball history that I think just the broad baseball community will continue to hold those up as like the memorialization moments where, you know, the game stops and the PA announcer makes an announcement, everybody, you know, gives them a standing ovation and stuff. I don't know that moves to 400 and you get the same on-field moment when someone hits their 400th career home run. I just think that we're just going to see a lot fewer of those moments where, you know, time gets to stand still and, you know, they get to have their nice moment like Miguel Cabrera had today. But just going back to that 500 home run, like you talked about, what was it, Trout and Tatis having 47%, that's
Trout. So Trout has an 85% chance.
That's not gonna. I like that might not happen. He's 230 away.
Mike Trout is a 6-win player now, so it's fine.
yeah, that's right.
Yeah, no, I would if there was one person on this list that I would say gets 500, I think it would be Trout.
Yeah,
I think Nelson Cruz has a better chance of getting 500 than Trout does.
How much longer, like? Again, like, I hate to say it, but like, how much fucking longer is he gonna play? I don't know. I mean, so I guess more of the question is like, okay, like, let's say none of these guys get to 500. That doesn't erase the fact that Mike Trout is one of the three or four best baseball players I've ever watched. I don't like when people say Mike Trout is the best player we've ever seen, as if like Barry Bonds didn't exist for all of our lifetimes. But that doesn't matter. We're not gonna get into that now. But yeah, like, I guess I just think, and the other thing that I think relevant to the home run conversation is like, the guys that are going to be in these conversations, like A-Rod has 600 home runs, you know, we're learning more and more about the help that a lot of these guys got to get to these levels. And certainly the 3000 hit leaderboard is a similar kind of thing. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. And then I think, you know, the darkest sort of thoughts of my head are just like, this is by design as well. Like this is a symptom of this continual pressure to make major leaguers as cheap and expendable as possible. So they're not going to get the playing time that Cal Ripken, no one's going to be allowed to start however many games Cal Ripken started. Nobody's going to be given, like, the Angels cut Albert Pujols, you know, and the only team in baseball that I don't believe anything that was reported to the contrary, the only team in baseball that wanted him was St. Louis for one very specific role. Like, I just don't think that teams are going to give the chances to players that it's going to take to get to these milestones either.
Yeah, I think that's definitely right. And I think, I don't know, yeah, I think maybe that those moments that we're talking about might just have of the past, because like if you were to say, okay, it's 2,500 hits now and, you know, 400 home runs, I don't know. I feel like that would take a lot of convincing to get people to hop on board and be, and, you know, just be totally on board with that. And although, to the contrary, you could just go the extreme opposite and have those moments all the time, because I think last year there was like a brief stoppage of play when Gene Segura got his 200th career double. Like, I think they did a graphic up on the board, so you could just, you know, celebrate every round number. But yeah, I think those, you know, at least right now, because it's so far away, I think those could be kind of far away from where we're at.
I mean, I think like the new, we're going to keep going back, but like, I think the new bellwether, like if you think about like Vlad Sr., who was an excellent ball player in the 95th percentile, 96th percentile of all baseball players that have ever played the game, 2,590 hits, 449 career home runs, short of the metrics that we would consider to be like inner circle stuff, but like, I think that there are going to be players that are going to get to 2,500 hits, and there are going to be players that are going to get to 450 home runs. Is that not an acceptable baseline?
Well, okay. I think that is an interesting point, because strictly in terms of like Hall of Fame conversation, we have these traditional 3,000 and 500 and stuff. And I think that kind of viewpoint could change so that we adjust our benchmark to, I think 2,500 and then 400 home runs becomes the new, in terms of like when we talk about, okay, that's like, that qualifies for automatic Hall of Fame enshrinement if someone, you know, hits that 2,500 hit mark and the 400 home run mark. I do think maybe the conversation starts to shift just specifically in terms of Hall of Fame eligibility, but maybe not in terms of like the on-field of those moments.
Mm. I think that's fair, yeah.
Well, that's kind of depressing. So what do we celebrate then? Nothing, I guess.
Yeah, no more.
There is 200 doubles.
Yeah, true. Sam.
Yeah.
Do you get checks from the government? And when you do you deposit them in an ATM or do you use your cell?
Okay, so I have a wild card answer here for you. Or checks from the government?
Yeah, like, you don't just let the government put money in your bank account.
The United States government.
No, the government of Chile. What?
I'm just, you know, I'm thinking out loud here. No, I think I have gotten it directly. Although, jury duty check. I deposit my checks in person at the bank through a human teller.
Ha-ha!
I didn't know I'd be ridiculed.
No. You're join the elite club of us old timers that actually like getting paper, like hard copies of stuff.
Right. I bring it in person and I to it.
Yeah, Josh is gonna be shit for that, but no, it's awful. Not something to hang your head about. It's something to be proud of.
Oh, I go into the bank physically for one reason, and that's because I need quarters for laundry. okay, wild. Sam, did you have a takeaway? We can probably wrap up, but did you have a takeaway on this game? We talked about the morons in the outfield.
I think I need some more fill-in on that, but I can do that on my own. But I'm glad Gallo sort of did something. It was at that point where you kind of just like feel bad for the guy, and you just want him to get on base. so I'm glad that happened. And
Do either of you have expectations for Garrett Cole tomorrow?
Oh. Okay.
The game is going to start on time. It's going to be warm. Billy Cristero.
Yeah. Barring unforeseen pregame delays or any other incident that he can point to if his start doesn't go well. No, it's Garrett Cole. I'm always going to say that he's going to shove on any given day. And yeah, like we can talk a lot about Garrett Cole, but he still has my complete faith. I mean, and I do expect him to, I mean, last time he faced Cleveland was in, well, no, that wasn't the last time he faced Cleveland, but I mean, I still go back to that 13 strikeout game that he had in the wild card playoff in 2020, facing off against Shane Bieber. And I expect that out of him tomorrow more than I expect him to go two innings giving up like three runs. So
yep, we'll get out of here in a second, but Brian, you had something you wanted to say. What's up?
Yeah, guys, I just wanted to know, I've got two questions. One would be, if Miguel was a Yankee and did this with his contract, he hasn't hit 20 home run, more than 20 home runs since 2016. And I think he's got like two more year contracts that's making a lot of money. Do you think he would be as celebrated?
If Miguel Cabrera was a Yankee, Yankee fans would be even more unbearable than they are.
You really think so? With that contract?
Look at the way that they've treated Aaron Judge, who doesn't even have a $280 million contract yet. They would be crucifying Miguel Cabrera. They'd be blood in the street.
For like the last couple of years, that would have been really bad.
Yeah, they would have been. Everyone would have been very polite today, and Michael had some stupid soliloquy that he does because he likes to sound important. But for the last 3 years, Miguel Cabrera would have woken up with a knife on his pillow, like a fan would have snuck in and placed it there.
Oh, I was looking at the contract, and I can't believe how bad it was. I was like, "Are you kidding me?" I think it goes to till he's 42 years old.
Yeah, 2024. Yeah.
But the contract, when I looked it up, it was in red those last 2 years. So I don't know if that's player option or team option. So
the last year, player options.
Yeah,
24 and 25.
Yeah. And it's so funny because like they announced the extension. So he had signed the first extension when 2010, and then they did another extension after the 2014 season that kicked in 2016. And it was like, okay, like right now this guy's the best hitter on the planet, but that's not going to stay forever. How do you not? I don't know. It's such a weird, like these conversations are so weird because like, how do you not lock up the best hitter your franchise has had in, I don't know, when did Al Kaline retire? 70s?
Yeah.
Like, you know, the best player your franchise has had in 40 years.
Well, Boston traded that center fielder, I can't think of his name, and you think to yourself, our team's going to make that decision of like, I'm not going to give a 10-year contract, I'd rather spread it around. And
no, I think we've absolutely seen that. I think the days of the Albert Pujols and Miguel Cabrera contracts and Robinson Cano, for that matter, are long gone. Like,
yeah,
32-year-olds are not going to get a 10-year deal.
I think that the move, I think that the move is going to be like, I think you are going to see more Tatis, Wander Franco style extensions. I know the Jays are trying to get it done with Vlad and Bo, and both guys are saying, you know, no, I want to be free agents. In which case, you got to be like, you know, okay, like it sucks that you have that opinion, but it is what it is. But yeah, and like it's sad that like for Miguel Cabrera, I think a similar thing with Albert Pujols. Like, so Pujols is probably done after this year. Then he waits 5 years to go into the Hall, which means it'll be like 17, 18 years. Albert Pujols was the man, and it'll be a similar thing with Cabrera. He won't get into the Hall of Fame until 2030. Mm-hmm. So again, we're talking like 15, 16 years since he was terrifying, like truly terrifying, and you know, just such a weird little way that baseball history works.
And my other question would be, how much rope are the Yankees going to give Gallo? Do you think 30 more games, if he only has a couple home runs and his average is, you know, around 200, like what is the
take a 200 level.
Yeah, his average is going to be around 200.
Take that.
I mean, my question to you would be like, what do you think the Yankees are going to do with Gallo?
Yeah,
like they're not going to cut him. They're not going to trade him.
No, so, I'm just saying that his play would be dramatically decreased.
Well, I think they're going to continue to play him, if only because they're really locked into this. I don't know if you read the site, but one of our regular commenters came up with something that he called the 130 game plan.
Yeah.
Which basically you have 10 players for 9 positions and everybody gets 130 games. And I think Boone talked about this and the phrase he used is 500 at-bats. Everyone is going to get 500 at-bats. And I think it's just a way to keep guys fresh. Like, forget about whatever production Gallo may or may not give you. It's just a way to, you know, keep guys healthy. So
now I do think that, like, I think that if, you know, this were to continue, Gallo would find himself in the position that Gleyber Torres is, where he is the default bench guy.
Yeah.
Because you can't take LeMahieu out right now. IKF has looked pretty good over the last week and a half. So I think that Gallo could find himself in that situation. You know, obviously Gleyber Torres is still getting playing time, but he's not penciled into the lineup every single day. And I think in Gallo's case, it would be a situation where Judge and Stanton are in the lineup every single day. And then it's a coin flip whether or not you have Hicks or Gallo. I think that could happen. But I also, like, I think that there's some structural problems. I don't know. I'm going to write an article about this at some point. I think there's some structural problems to having Joey Gallo at Yankee Stadium. I'm not sure the field works for him and his kind of play. But this is a guy who has had 5 seasons of being an all-star, being a very productive hitter with all of the warts that he brings, and being a really good defender. And you don't, like, defense doesn't, I know he hasn't been great this year, but defense doesn't generally crater in 27, 28 year olds, especially playing a corner outfield. You know, it's not like he's playing shortstop. So, you know, it's April 25th or whatever day it is. I don't even know what is time. 23rd. It's even earlier than I thought. So, you know, let's worry about Joey gets in June.
Yeah. To me, the biggest upgrade, like, I can see them making and with the trade, and I'm still surprised they went into the season with it, is the catching position. I just can't imagine these two catchers are going to be our catchers at the end of the year. I'd be really surprised.
Oh, they
absolutely are.
The pitching, oh my God, people wonder why it's so good. Part of it is because Matt Blake and all the rest, but, like, this is why they went with Higgy and Trevino, is because they're excellent defensive catchers. And I'm morbidly curious if there's more in Trevino's bat than he has shown. There's nothing in Kyle Higashioka's bat.
Oh, my God. Nothing in that bat. There's nothing in Higgy's bat.
Thing where, like, a bunch of people online that are determined to prove that they're smarter than everybody else was like, oh, like, Higgy's last 250 batted balls have an X wOBA of this. And, like, I like doing that stuff, but, like, look on, man. Kyle Higashioka sucks offensively. Great defensive catcher. Terrible offensively. I'm interested, like, given that Boone said we're going to go to this 50-50 tandem, I'm interested to see who starts tomorrow, because Gerrit Cole has this thing where he has to throw to Higashioka, but I would rather be giving Trevino playing time right now. That might just be me, and I think it might be a good way to kind of shock Cole out of whatever thing, I don't know. They would also give him a good excuse if he sucked. So maybe you should really do it. And then Cole, cause it wasn't my fault. I wasn't throwing to my catcher.
Yeah. I mean, I'm also think I'm on the Trevino train, but no, I think Higgy catches tomorrow because Cole's going to get his way. But I mean, I think the Yankees have also preseason resigned themselves to getting zero production, offensive production. And I don't really care what anybody says about seeing upside in Rortvedt's bet and bat, or, you know, like you said, Higgy's lost whatever batted balls. Like, no, give me a break. Like, they're known quantities at this point, and it was a calculation of, do we want the value that they're going to provide to us be offensive or defensive?
And honestly, I'm fine with it because
me too.
It's the best pitching staff in the American League.
Yeah, and what I'm more interested to see, I want to see what, like, Trevino and Higgy's combined framing runs are at the end of the year, because I would wager it would be well ahead of any other catcher or catching tandem in baseball.
Sam, any final thoughts before we get out of here?
Yeah, I agree. Just that was a preconceived. That's how it was going to be. There wasn't going to be any offense, and I don't think any should have been expected or expected in the future. But I think they're, yeah, like you said, the other side of that, we've already seen the dividends. So,
okay.
If I could just give like one final thought on Gallo, and like I am probably one of, I'm probably one of his lesser supporters on the entire staff, but like he is not a 17 WRC plus true talent player. Like it's going to get better. Yeah. So, you know, we can still criticize him. We can still pick holes in his swing because there's a lot of holes there to be picked, but he's gonna come around from being, I mean, he's just, like I said, he's not a 17 WRC plus hitter. And I guess, I mean, I think, I guess he has closed right this morning.
Get over yourself. I'm going to start sending you an invoice every time you make a joke like that.
Charge me $11 every time that I make a joke, Gallo getting dressed joke.
Exactly. Okay. The Yankees have won 4-5. Things are looking good. For the first time all year, I feel kind of confident about this team. Go Yankees. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Peter.
Sure thing.
Thank you,
John.
You
know what? You know what? I'm feeling generous. Al, you got 30 seconds because I want to go eat something. Hello.
Al calling in from Wisconsin, man. I'm happy the Yankees won, man. It's a phenomenal win. I hope this catapults us, man, to keep them going, man. Definitely. I'm definitely happy about the.
All right. Thanks for joining us, Al.
Yeah, no problem, man. Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Have a good day, everybody. It's Saturday. It's Saturday afternoon where I am, and it's gorgeous outside. So go do something outside. It's fun.
Yeah.
Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Peter.
Yep. Sam, Josh, until next time, go Yankees.
Cheers, guys.
See you guys.